All right, Reg, how are you doing today? What do you say? Podcast in your future? Mine too. Well, what a coincidence, and here we are. So since the tarot cards say that, we might as well do it. What do you say? Make them come true. All right. Get your trigger finger ready. Put it in the book, episode 519, 519-er. All right? Three S's, star, smile, strong, and here's the countdown. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And of course, it's always important to listen to the podcast, but I think it's just as important to get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. If you like what you hear, you can always go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, hit the prompt for this specific podcast, and there you will find podcast after podcast after podcast dating back several years of the almost 10, and we're getting pretty close to our 10th anniversary, the almost 10 years of podcasts that we've done. So if you want to hear where we've been, so you got an idea of where we might be going in the future, you just go there and keep loading more and scrolling down and loading more and scrolling down and enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. We've done quite a few podcasts in our almost 10-year history. So much so that we are now at episode 519. So I think we can all agree that over the last several months, at least, if not over the last several years, there has been a lot of tension and chaos in this country and amongst Americans. For whatever the reason, and I'm not going to get into any of that, but let's just say that there's a lot of division and there's a lot of stress and there's a lot of chaos and there's a lot of anger and there's on both sides, and we're not yet at the boiling point. I think for some people we have been. We'll see. I don't know if everything has really exploded yet, but on the whole, I don't think people, humans, deal with stress very well. You know, there are more books and more theories on stress and stress and stress, and all we hear about is I'm so stressed out, I'm so stressed out. That's all we hear about. Everybody is stressed out about something, and we all have our daily stresses, and that's enough to keep you a little on edge. And then you overlay that with this kind of overall stress of the world situation. If you want to start to look at the big picture, you can always look at the smaller details of your own life or your own little bubble world there. But then you can also expand out and say, yeah, and not only I've got stresses with work or family or this or that or this or that, financial, as I said, family, business, work, kids, parent, whatever it is that may be adding to a stress quotient in your life, then you can go and look at the bigger picture and say, and then look what's going on around us on a larger scale. We're, you know, in terms of how some of those bigger issues may be affecting you literally, personally, or just ideologically. You're not happy with the way things are going. So needless to say, we already have a certain amount of stress in our lives on a daily basis that we hopefully have learned to deal with and keep under control. Sometimes we need some outlets. And then, as I said before, you add to that perhaps some other people's bigger views of stressful situations going on in the world today, and that even adds to that. And as I said, we don't really deal with that. And I'm beginning to see the manifestation of that out in the real world, out in the world, in dealing with people. As I said, we have problems dealing with stress. Just ask the pharmaceutical community. We've got a lot of people on a lot of different drugs to deal with stress. There's a lot of medications. There's a lot of, techniques to deal with stress and, acupuncture and other things and massage and Tai Chi and all these different methods and meditations. I mean, stress, 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 stress. That's all we hear. And one of the things that I think that people use as without having to do anything elaborate or learn anything like out of their daily routine, obviously whether it's a good idea or not, for many people, having a good cigarette, just to inhale and exhale, even though it can kill you over time. And we know that for a fact. Did you see in the news recently? I don't know how they're ever going to enforce this. It sounds great as an idea, I guess, and on paper. I don't know how this law or this edict that the United Kingdom, England, is trying to pass as a law, but they are going to try to ban smoking for the next generation. Anybody born after 2008, if this law passes, will not be able to buy tobacco, cigarettes of any kind. And then I believe there's also a 2030 deadline. Anybody then born, I'm not sure of the specifics. Look it up. But there's, and I just thought of it. I would have done that on my own here. I just thought of it. It just popped in my mind talking about stress. But yeah, the UK is trying to pass some law to outlaw smoking in the next century or for the next generation. I don't know what the specifics are, and it's not going to affect us. This is a UK proposed law. I think it's probably good in theory. I don't know how it's going to be enforced. And I'm not a smoker. I never have been, so it doesn't really affect me one way or the other. We know the dangers of smoking. As I said, oftentimes cigarettes have and are used as a stress reliever. I think there's maybe healthier things you could use than cigarettes. I think we've started to move away from that, but for some people who are still addicted to it, that's they're used to that, and they feel that that's a stress reliever. I guess we've seen the rubber balls, people squeezing the rubber balls, and all the different kind of corporate stress reliever things that have come out with gimmicks or perhaps real life things. We are always looking to relieve stress. It seems like we either, whether it is real, and in some people's lives, there's no question about it, there is some real stressful situations. And then some people may exaggerate that, but it doesn't matter if exaggerated or even it doesn't exist. If someone believes it, it's having an impact on them. Whether it's mentally induced or reality induced, it's still affecting the body. And we know the effects that stress can have on the body and our organs and, obviously our heart and other organs. So, yeah, stress is a big, big deal. And as I said, we have found ways medically, physically, metaphysically to deal with stress in many ways. And aside from smoking, which I don't think is the best alternative for you to do, to just take a nice big puff or a drag on a cigarette, I think there's better ways to do that. I think some people also use driving as a stress reliever. You know what? I just got to get away from it all. And let me just, I got to get away. I got to just get my car and drive, right? You hear that. Maybe you do that yourself. And I think there's some positive things about that, what a drive might do, especially a drive on your own. You know, if there are certain people or certain situations that you need to get away from, getting in a car and driving, putting on the radio or just being with your thoughts and driving can be therapeutical. I believe that. But also can be dangerous if you think about it. If you say, oh, I'm just going to go for a drive, I got to clear my head, right? You've said that or you've heard people say that. But then, and I think there is some medicinal or at least some, mental benefits to that of just, creating this little bubble of solitude to get and physically removing yourself from a potential stressful situation. You need just a whether it's a temporary or an elongated exit or escape from it physically and mentally. And driving can provide that, right? People just say, Joe, I just want to go out for a nice relaxing drive. Well, when you use the word relaxing, that means you're relaxing from what? From stress. And I don't mean to sound like, Dr. Phil or somebody here, but I'm just saying. And so while that's that could be a good temporary stress reliever or a good temporary solution to a high stressful situation, just to get out of the area of that and get into a car and be alone, that might help it to some extent. But it also, we should also raise a red flag too, is that then, we have taken driving, I think, too much for granted. And I'm noticing a lot more accidents, and clearly over the last, almost 20 years now that the smartphone has been around, 2007, it's coming on its 20th anniversary next year. And wow, what an impact in 20 years that little device has had. And one of the devices it has is that you will notice there are more accidents. I'm sure if you have any friends or you that may work in the insurance company world, especially car insurance, I guarantee you that they will tell you that there has been an uptick in car accidents over the last 20 years. And I think you can, and I don't have any data to prove this, just observational, driving around, anecdotally hearing from people. It sounds like there's a lot more tickets being given and accidents happening. And we know that people are checking their phones. We know that people are distracted by their phones. But there are other distractions too. And I think the problem is that, the longer you drive, the more confident you are in your driving skills. We all like to brag these days because it's almost a part of our lifestyles. Many of us like to brag about that we are multitaskers, right? If you're applying for a job, I'm sure you throw that in. I'm a good multitasker. From my observation, I don't think anyone is a good multitasker in any way. You may want to feel good about yourself. You may think that you've been able to do, you got a lot of things done today. I was multitasking. But as somebody who makes lists for their day every day, I am somebody that lives by the adage of finish what you start. And what I notice in many people's behaviors, while they think they're multitasking, to me, a task isn't finished until it's finished. You don't get the check mark unless it's done. And so when I go about my day, and I make a daily list, and I make that daily list like a week in advance, and then I add things to it as things pop up during the week. But I have my framework. I look at my daily planner and see if I've got anything specifically planned, or do I have anything regular that I do on a specific day, whether it's shopping or paying bills and blah, blah, blah. And I'll put that on my list. And then as the day goes on or the week goes on, oh, well, I've got an appointment here. I got to pick up my dry cleaning on Wednesday, blah, blah, blah. You know, things add into the list. But I don't consider my list multitasking. My list is filled with tasks, and they all need to be addressed and fulfilled before I could do that most satisfying of things, putting a line through it, or putting a check mark on my list. Done. Finish what you start. I don't believe that many people, they think they're multitasking, but they're really not, because the idea of multitasking means that not only are you doing many things at one time, but you are doing them and completing them, and you are doing them at the level of completion and expertise of which they are expected to be done if you were doing it by itself. You see, that's the real definition of multitasking. You don't say, well, I did five things at one time and I did them all kind of just satisfactory. Well, then you didn't multitask. You did these things at the same time, but you didn't perform them at the best or highest or expected level of expertise and quality that it would have been if you had done it by yourself and you monotasked. If you had all of your attention on one task, then perhaps that would have been done better on time and correctly and of high quality. You're thinking that, well, I've got these five things done and I did them all sort of at the same time, but I got them all done. Yeah, but did you get them done at the highest quality that you should have, that the people receiving these tasks would have expected of you? Or were three of them done well and two of them were kind of done on the fly and they're not as good as they should be, but I got them all done? Well, that doesn't matter. Because if you owed five people five different things, each person would be expecting from you the highest quality. They don't care that you had five things to do. They asked for one, and they want it to be done exactly correct, the way they asked for it, at the highest quality you are able to perform and deliver it at. They're not asking for the best quality that you can deliver when you're doing five things at one time. Nobody would ask that. If you hired a contractor and you said, can you fix my plumber? And you said, hey, can you fix my pipe? And he says, well, yeah, I've got three other jobs, but they're all in the neighborhood, so I'm going to be able to do all three of these at the same time. I'm going to start doing yours, then I'm going to have to start the other guys, then I'm going to go to their house and da-da-da. You know, okay, but, you know, I need my pipes fixed correctly. They can't leak. They have to deliver the water, whatever the problem is. And so, the plumber can't say, well, it's good enough. Yeah, I know, but there's a little drop here. Well, it's just a little drop. You know, I was doing three jobs at one time. Well, that's not my problem. I hired you to do my problem. So, and I'm just using that as an example. I'm not saying that plumbers do that, but I'm just saying that, how would you feel if your job wasn't done to the best quality that plumber could do because he wasn't completely focused on your job? He was quote unquote multitasking. And I think that the term multitasking has been diluted, and it's delusional. It's diluted with a D-I, and it's delusional with a D-E. I think people have diluted the word, and they have deluded themselves into thinking that they can multitask. And everybody thinks they can, because we're so pushed and pulled in many directions. Oh, I'm a good multitasker. Well, you know, let's look at the finished product here. Let's look at the deliverables, you know, and then we can decide whether you are. And so what I've noticed in my world here, driving, we think, you know, that we are multitaskers. And so when we feel that we have one skill that we have completely mastered, then we can add a new one in to multitask, right? Oh, I can do this and this. And I think it's been proven. And as I said, talk to any insurance agent or broker or anybody who deals in the insurance, especially in cars. A lot of accidents based on people being distracted, most likely using their phones. Talk to any policeman. Distractions in cars. You know, what did Tiger Woods say when he flipped his car over a few weeks ago? I was turning the radio station. Okay, I don't believe it, but that's what we. Oh, I was distracted by. We're always distracted in our cars, and the smartphone has been the main distraction, certainly, especially amongst young people who just have this addiction. You talk about, you know, the UK trying to get rid of smoking addictions for a generation. What about screen addiction? That's a whole other story. But my point is that I think we have become a little too confident in our driving skills. We all think we're good drivers, first of all, right? You know that. I can easily keep my eyes on the road and have my head down, or at least I know where these buttons are. You know, I can type without looking at them. I can check my phone, and we've got all these hands-free things in the car in order to allow for this multitasking. So the car manufacturers aren't helping. It scares me to think that we're behind a deadly weapon. A car is a deadly weapon. It weighs in the 3,000 to 4,000 to 5,000 pound range, depending on the size of the car. Some of these big Humvees and things like that, who knows what the hell they weigh. But at the very least, I think a regular car weighs at least 3,000 pounds. So you've got a deadly weapon, and we've seen the damage and carnage that can happen in a car, right? I mean, we are not wondering. All you have to do is watch the nightly news and see the car crashes on the highways, on the roads, and see these mangled cars and people having to be taken out with the jaws of life, or people that sadly don't make it out. So I think we are in somewhat denial. We don't want to think of that. Sorry, I deal in reality. It's a very serious, anytime you get into the car, it's a serious matter. Certainly shouldn't get into a car, you know, if you're, you know, drunk or high. I mean, you're just adding now to the chances of that. But even if you're completely sober, completely of all your faculties, then the goal is to be as alert as you can while driving. And we know that we aren't. We all know that. And whether it's the music in the car, changing the station, whether it's looking for change, whether it's looking through something while you're driving, you know in your heart of hearts that when you're driving somewhere, you don't always keep your eyes on the road. You know that. And we get away with it. And hopefully, at least we do that when there's no one else around, that the chances of being, of causing some kind of an accident are low. We're all distracted. I'm not putting myself above anyone else. But, you know, I just think back of when we were at driver's ed in that driving simulator. I don't even know if they still do that anymore. Remember that? If you're old enough, you remember the simulator that you sat in, and it had the gas pedal and the brake and the steering wheel. And then there was this big screen in front of you, and it showed, and you were driving down the street at a certain, you know, at a certain speed, and then all of a sudden a child would run out from a parked car, or a kid on a bike, or someone would open a door from a parked car, and you would have to brake, and then they would stop the film and say, did you identify that possible hazard? Do you remember that? I don't know if they still do that. I hope they do. I've been the driver's ed in quite a few decades, so I'm not sure what they do anymore. I still hope it, because that scared the heck out of me. And to be honest, when I drive, I still have that in my mind. I have sitting in that simulator thinking of, did you identify that possible hazard? And and that's how I drive. When I'm driving, I'm looking ahead of me, I'm looking right around me, but I'm also looking a block or two ahead and seeing, oh, there's something going on up there. Oh, there's somebody walking across the street with a package. Okay, it's not affecting me now, but while I get to that person, I bet you they're going to open up their car door to put that box in their car if it's parked there. And I know darn well that they're most likely going to open that door wide. And it could, and if I'm too close to that, to park cars as I'm driving, there's a chance that something can happen. So I'm going to slow down, or I'm going to move a little away, because I guarantee you that person's probably going to do something goofy. Or if I'm looking ahead and I see somebody coming out of a parking lot and I see them kind of inching and they want to pull out fast, I will slow down, because some people just zip out. And yes, and it's happened many times when I'm at a red light. Just because the green light, when the red light turns green, it doesn't mean that in that second, in that very second, that you need to go on the red, on the green light. In fact, you shouldn't. Because what if somebody is going through a yellow light and hasn't made it through the intersection yet? Or even worse, as we know, what if somebody is running a red light? They thought they could make the yellow. They didn't. They're going too fast. They're going through a red. And if you go right on that green when the green changes, you're going to get hit. And that's really what I want to talk about today. Because what I'm noticing here is that we are distracted. But at the same time, we are not being, we are, and we're being distracted by devices in our cars, whether it's the radio, whether it's the cell phone, the smartphone that we have to always keep checking every 2 seconds. If we get a text, we have to check it because everything's so important in our world. Or if you're sitting with somebody. You know I don't have kids. I understand kids are screaming. I get it. But when you're in a car, you really need to be focused on the aspects of driving. So I question, while I could understand living in our stressful lives, wanting to get into a car to sort of blow off some steam, get away from a stressful situation and just drive for, I don't even know, sometimes you don't even know where you're going. I just want to drive. I just got to get away from here. I'll be up by myself with my own thoughts, away from this, blah, blah, blah. That's good, but then that is a distraction. Because you're probably, even though you're using the driving as a stress reliever, you're also rerunning the stressful situation in your mind. And that's distracting you. Your mind, your thoughts are distracting you. Forget the radio. Forget the iPhone. Forget the screaming kids. Your own brain sometimes could be so noisy. Your own brain can be distracting. Being by yourself, you will distract yourself. sometimes, especially if you're in a stressful situation. And so while I understand you might want to take a puff of that cigarette to relieve some stress, not a good idea in the long term. I can understand why you want to get into a car and just drive for a while to get away from that stress. Maybe not the best idea as well, because most likely if you're in a stressful, angry situation, to get into a car and just drive may be a temporary escape from that stressful situation, but it's also creating a possible distraction for you in the way you drive your car. And then you can possibly go through a red light, be distracted, not, don't hit your brake quick enough and hit somebody. You know, you never know. You might not, if you know, you might not be able to identify that possible hazard if you're not paying strict attention. And once again, I'm not saying that I don't fall into any of these bad behaviors that I'm describing, but I do try to eliminate most of those. And the reason that I wanted to talk about today is I understand the idea of the escape or the solitude or the stress reducing or the therapeutic. And sometimes, you know, in a chaotic world, in a stressful world that you feel like I don't have any power, there's all these forces that are hitting me. In turn, you know, in your own little world, perhaps there's some situations that are applying stress to you and you don't feel control. Or in the wider world, as I said, you know, we're not making decisions on stuff like that, but we have to deal in the world. And it might stress us out. And so driving can be therapeutic, not only for a stressful situation or something specific, but also in the larger sense. If you think about it, when we're driving, it's one of the few times that we are in control by ourselves. We control that situation. So if you feel, you know, you're being, you know, you're in a daunting situation, you're being overwhelmed by things that are out of your control. When you get into a car, that offers you some respite from that feeling of you're unable to control the situation. Because when you're in the car, you're controlling it, right? You get in the car, you hit the starter, you hit the gas, you hit the brake, you turn the wheel. That car is moving and driving in a certain direction or going at a certain speed or stopping when it is solely because of you. So in a real sense, with all the outside influences in our specific lives and the world in general that we don't have much control over, other people, other circumstances are kind of, you know, attacking us from all different sides, it may seem at sometimes. When you get into a car, you're in control. That's your little world. That's your little kingdom. And so sometimes, as I said before, not only do we feel very confident in our driving skills, but because the car offers us this rare opportunity to truly be in charge or be in control of something, that exaggerated feeling of control overcomes us. So, oh, that guy's not cutting me off. I'm not staying behind this guy who's driving the speed limit here, or maybe he's, you know, he's still driving too slow for my liking, and I'm going to cut around him, and I don't care who's around. You know, our cars sort of become our extensions of our frustration and our need to control our lives. And so we kind of transpose our lack of control in other aspects of life, and we put them all in our driving And so you've seen some people that are they're driving crazy, and they cut in and they can't wait behind you. They're on their they're on your butt. They cut around. They could turn on right turns where it says no right turn on red, and they still turn. You see that. That, you know, the rules don't apply. I can't drive behind you. They can't drive behind anybody, even if you're going. Sometimes, we all drive over the speed limit, right? We know that. And a lot of places now on highways, the speed limits are 60 or 65, which some people mean that now you're supposed to drive 85. I'm sorry, but I'm not going to drive 85. A lot of times, a lot of times people get on my butt, and it's like, wait a minute. There's been some occasions where, hey, I'm driving on a ticket. I can't afford to get another ticket. So I'm sorry. And I might be in the middle lane or the right lane. I'm going slow on purpose. I am observing the speed limit. I'm still probably going a little over. Let's face it, we all do. But I can't afford to go 20 over just because you want to go 20 over because you see it's 65 and so you want to go 85, or you see it's 60 and you want to go 80. I can't do that. I can't take that risk because you're on my butt. I might get the ticket and you won't. And now I have two tickets. You don't know my situation. I have to drive within a relative range of the speed limit because I'm already in trouble. Now, people are going 10 or 15 miles an hour below the speed limit, okay, fine, get around them. But we don't know everybody's situation. But my point is that, there's a lot of times when we are driving in a certain way and it's our only control. It's the same way when people cross the street? I'm sorry, but I see a lot of people today crossing the street on green lights. Do you notice that? It's a green light. And people, it's on the red, so everybody stopped. But then it's not like nobody can see that. You could see that, it's got the person walking, they've got the little palm thing that says do not walk. And they just start to walk. And the traffic has a green light. And I really think that that's some kind of a weird power trip. Like, oh, yeah? I don't have much control about what's going on in my life, but right now, I can make you stop your car. Because you're not going to hit me. So it's a power trip. It's a weird, human psychological thing. And I think driving some ways is a power trip to some people. And what I'm noticing is that, we're easily triggered today by things. We're swamped. We're stressed out. We feel that we're being inundated. And I've noticed that, especially in a car, last week I was talking about what we'll wait in line for and how we will have patience and wait in a line for 2 hours for something we really want to do, but then we won't have patience to wait in a 4-minute line for something that we don't consider important. Two or three people in front of us in line is too much for us in certain occasions, but in other occasions, 500 people in line in front of us, but it doesn't matter because I want to get to that destination. I'll wait in that line. It's an interesting, human behavior is, try to figure it out, right? Nobody's figured it out. Freud never figured it out. That's why there's so many books written, because we continually try to figure out just what the heck makes us tick. We are a bundle of contradictions every minute. I spoke a few weeks ago before about, what's the nightly news except a physical or a recounting of all the bad decisions that many people made during the day. That's the daily news. That's the daily newscast. Whether it's a murder, a robbery, a car accident, it's bad decisions. That's what the news basically is. It's the bad decision report. That's what it really should be called. And as I said, driving many times seems to be this control. Well, the one area that we kind of can control. We get into our car and we are the captains of that ship. That car doesn't move unless we do something. It doesn't go backwards or forward, stop or go, turn or go straight without us. We're in control. And I've also noticed, and maybe it's an outgrowth of what's going on in today's world, the stress factor, but I have noticed that people are less patient when they're driving. I don't know if people are getting into their cars as a stress reliever or a manifestation of that stress. That when they're driving, they are actually manifesting that stress in the manner in which they drive, rather than the driving itself being the chance for them to just take a breather from the stress. They actually incorporate the stress into their driving, and they become a hazard, and they become very impatient. Now, I think, and the reason I'm saying is that I have noticed over the last several weeks, I've been sitting at red lights. Now, as I said, I do not have my phone. I have my phone in my pocket when I'm driving a car. I do not have it out. Sometimes I even have it in the glove compartment. I do not have it sitting next to me. I know people have it in the cup holder on that thing, blah, blah, blah. As I said, I am not tethered to my smartphone. I might be in the minority. My car does have hands-free. If the phone rings, I have access to it. If I get a text, it tells me what the text is, or, you know, the text. I have a text. I wait till I get to a red light, and I might check it. If the phone rings, I can do hands-free and drive. I don't physically have that phone in my hand, and I'm not checking it while I'm driving, which is suicide, and we've seen that. Or I don't even have it at a red light, and we've seen that. I mean, how many times have you been in a line to make a left turn, for instance, onto a highway or, you know, at an intersection? And okay, so you're already sitting there waiting to make that left turn as it is. Especially, let's say, you know, you're in a long line to make a left turn or even a right turn onto an expressway, right? You're one of, you know, 15 cars. It's a very busy expressway, and there's a long turn lane, and you're in that lane, and you're kind of inching every three, you know, another foot, you know, and a few cars get through and you're still not there. So this, of course, you know that is an opportunity for people who are, once again, we don't have any patience. We have very short attention spans today, and we have to be doing something. We have to be doing something. We just can't sit. We have just become too antsy now. Before these, what do you have, ants in your pants? Most people today have ant hills in their pants. They just don't have a few ants in their pants. They have an entire civilization of ants in their pants. They can't sit still. So if there's a point when their car stops, whether they're in a long lane or in a left turn lane, they're going to pull out their phone and they're going to check their texts or check their, you know, or scroll, blah, 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 because, well, I'm not going anywhere. And that's when you can bump into somebody's car in the back because you think the traffic's moving. Even if it's 2 feet or two, you know, you're just moving 2 feet, boom, oh, or you're slamming the brake. Oh, I thought, oh, or how many times do you put your head down to look at that phone that you think was no more than a second, and you look up and there's no cars in front of you now. There were five cars ahead of you. You put your head down for 2 seconds to check your phone, and you picked up, and all the traffic has moved, and you're sitting there, and now you're stopping traffic behind you. Or, as I said before, you're in that left turn lane, and you're waiting, and or even on you're at a left turn lane to get on the highway, and the first person, you know, they got the red light, so they're the first one that's going to move all this traffic. Once that green arrow goes, they need to get started, because those green arrows, especially at busy times, those green arrows don't last as long to make that left turn. And that only makes that left turn lane more crowded if as many cars don't get through as possible. I mean, it's just human nature. I mean, it's just common sense. And we all know how many times the arrow turns green and that first car isn't moving. If they were looking at the light, they would see it turn green for the arrow and they would turn. So there, you don't have to be Columbo to figure this out. They're not looking at the light. They have their head down. They're checking their phone. And they just feel like, well, this light's going to be red for a while longer. Meanwhile, precious seconds are ticking by because that light is timed. You might have 15 seconds to get the left turn cars out. And if not, then that line continues to slow down and causing more traffic behind it, you know, filling up intersections with cars that are waiting to get in that line. And we know the drill. And so how many times have you been behind that first car that needs to make that all-important move to get this left lane going, and they're staying there? And so this is the whole point of what I'm trying to talk about. There is no doubt that in today's world, we are distracted by these smartphones. And there's no doubt that when we're at red lights, people are using it because they have anthills in their pants. They're using the red light to check their phones for whatever it is, texts, news, whatever. They can't just pay attention. They think they're multitasking, back to that point, but they're not. Don't tell me that you could drive and look at your phone at the same time. Yes, you can be in the car. You can have your foot on the brake. You could scarily have your foot on the gas while you're checking your phone. Very scary to do that. Did you identify that possible hazard? There's so many things that can happen. If you're driving down a side street, if you're driving where people are turning out of a parking lot, if you're driving where people are coming out of a side street, kids, bikes, people opening doors, did you identify that possible hazard? And you will not be able to identify that possible hazard if your head is down looking at your phone. Whether you're stopped at a stoplight, or even worse, if you're driving. And we know you're not going to see that possible hazard. But as I said, we think we're multitasking. We're not. We're not good multitaskers. Let me just make a blanket statement. No, you are not a good multitasker. You are not. You are not driving your car at the optimum level if you're checking your phone at the same time. You're just not. Multitasking doesn't mean you're doing things at the same time. That's not multitasking. Multitasking is doing tasks at the same time at their optimum level of efficiency or quality. That's what multitasking is. So I dare you to prove that you can multitask. If you're doing five things at one time or three things at one time, let me see the quality of those things. Well, I don't want to hear the excuse of, well, I was doing three things at the same time. That's not my fault. That means you don't know how to, you're not budgeting your time right to finish what you start. Multitasking also means to finish those tasks at the same time. at a high level, at the expected quality. My view is I've got five things on that list. I do one at a time, and they are done individually, attention paid, finished, check mark. Well, you know, I've got to do this, and I got the, and then that's happening at the same time. Get up earlier. Yes, all those things don't happen at the same time by accident. You've designed them happening that way because you didn't plan ahead. And then you're forced to multitask, and you think you're multitasking, but you're really not getting the jobs done. But here's my point. So we all have sat behind those cars at a turn, at a stop sign, where obviously there's no question that the person, because there is some stop, some legitimate stop, a red light, stop sign, that the person uses that moment to check their phone. And inevitably, they take longer than the stop should or does take. So what happens? You are behind that person. The light has turned. You see that they're not moving. And there comes a point then where you beep your horn. Hey, wake up, right? We've all done it. But here's the thing that I'm finding now. What I don't know about you. I'm not a horn blower. I'm not on my horn. I don't even know really how to hit my horn. I mean, don't get me wrong. Once again, I'm not Mr. Perfect Driver. I'm not Mr. Perfect Temper. I'm not putting myself above anything, but I do try my best. I don't blow the horn at people. I don't use the horn as a regular part of my driving habits. I am not on the horn. I only use the horn if it needs to be used in a case of emergency, or sadly, in this day and age, alerting somebody that they're not paying attention and you're blocking traffic. But I don't beep at people if they pass me up. I don't beep at people if they're driving too slow. I don't use the horn as an aggressive, part of the car to let out my anger or, like I've been talking, or let out my stress. I'm not using the horn as a stress reliever. I'm not using the gas pedal as a stress reliever. You shouldn't transpose your stress into your driving skills or your driving habits. Not good. Especially in the days of road rage, which is at an all-time high, which I think is because of stress. And we're not being able to handle it. We're in the car and especially in today's world, you don't know. And you can't count on the person that you might be blowing the horn at or giving somebody the finger. You don't know if that person, what kind of state of mind that person is in. And sadly, we don't know if that person has some kind of a deadly weapon. And I say this from personal experience because, sadly, I had one of my best friends of age 22 or 23. I don't think he had just turned 23 yet. I think he was still 22. When we were 22 years old, I mean, life completely ahead of us. And I had a friend, good friend of mine from grammar school, friend of mine still in high school. We were, you know, I hadn't seen him as much, obviously, during the last few years of high school and after, I went to college, but still a friend. Saw him occasionally out and about places. 22 years old, killed in cold blood by a gun, shot in the heart, and left in the middle of an intersection in Chicago because of a road rage incident that lasted several blocks, going from stop sign and stoplight to stoplight, and finally getting and the tempers were raging to the point where they got to this final stoplight at a major intersection in Chicago, and apparently they got out of the car, words were exchanged, and my friend was shot and killed and left in an intersection to die. So I speak from personal experience. I wasn't there, but that's what happened. That didn't have to happen. I don't know what was going on. I don't know if he contributed to this or not. I'm not blaming him, and I'm not also absolving him from blame as well. I don't know what happened that led up to it, but I do know how it ended. And it didn't end good for him. And I know that if he had to do it again, knowing what the outcome was, he probably would have laid off. I don't know who instigated this, but whatever happened, I'm sure my friend in the 3 minutes or 5 minutes before that never thought he wasn't going to make it through that third stoplight or whatever it was, that he was going to be dead after that third stoplight. I doubt it. And this is my point. You know, you can't take your stresses out, your angers out in your driving. You're going to cause an accident, or in this case, you may even cause a death. Completely preventable. So sad. But my point is, so what I'm noticing is that I think it's just the stresses we have. We have so little patience now, it seems, when we're driving. We feel like we're out of control with so much in our lives that when we get in the car, it's our chance to, it's our own little kingdom. And we get a chance to make the rules. Now, as I said, I don't use the horn in only the most extreme situations. You know, if there's somebody's driving through a red light, look out. I'm always looking out for other people. I'm seeing other people not paying attention, and I'm blowing a horn to wake them up that because they're not. I'm back in the simulator in high school. I'm looking three blocks ahead, and I'm seeing possible accidents, not even from in front of me, but in front of other cars. And I'm blowing the horn to alert them, like, whoa, do you see that car over there? Look out. You're obviously not paying attention. That's how I'm driving. I'm looking three or four blocks ahead to identify that possible hazard. So I don't use the horn. I don't lay the horn on unless in extreme situations or emergencies. And so, yes, I have been behind people who have been at a stop sign or have been in traffic where it's bumper to bumper. And so obviously there's a chance for ants in the pants to, I got to do something. I got to get my phone out. No, you don't. You're driving your car. That is an important enough and difficult enough task. You can't multitask. This is one job. This is the one task that needs to be a monotask. Driving your car needs to be a monotask. So it's become commonplace now, though, because so many people are on their phones, not paying attention, especially when they're stopped, whether it's at a stop sign, at a stoplight, or in bumper-to-bumper traffic, and then they have their heads down, they're checking their phone. They think it's only been about 30 seconds, but it isn't. And the traffic is moving, and now there's no cars in front of them, and you're blocking everybody behind them. So then, honk, honk. Okay, you have to use your horn there. Honk, hey, wake up, let's go. But what I'm noticing is that that's not an angry type of thing. It's a, hey, let's go. You know, you're not paying attention. But what I'm noticing is more people are so impatient. Maybe they're used to this of people, you know, having their heads down, that as soon as that green light changes, you know, from red to green, if you're not revving up your car like you're at the Indy 500, and as soon as that green light goes, like there's a flag that you're supposed to go and peel out, they're honking the horns. They're honking at you. And I'm like, wait, I have to, it takes me at least, a second to get my foot off the brake and onto the gas pedal. If I'm sitting there with my head down, or it's been like 10 seconds and I'm not moving the car since the light has turned, or five seconds, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's a long time for when the light moves to not be moving. So even 5 seconds. But my gosh, give me at least 2 seconds to move my foot from the brake to the gas pedal to go. In the last couple weeks, people have been honking as soon as the light goes. I'm like, whoa. I mean, I could see. If I was distracted, I had my head down and say, okay, you know, I did the golden rule or the sin that I've just been talking about. But no, I'm sitting there looking at the light, not distracted. The light turns, I'm going to move my foot and go. And before I can do that, I'm getting honked at. It's like, slow down. I don't know what pressures or stresses you're under, but I don't deserve to get this beeping here. I'm not holding up traffic. The light just literally turned a second ago. And I I'll be honest with you. I will probably wait a 1 or 2 count to go on purpose, because I have been in many, many situations. I have either observed them or have been that first car where if I did go exactly at that moment, like I was at an Indy race, when that light turned green, if I went the way so many of these people today want you to go, I would have been killed in a car wreck, because cars are going through red. We know cars are going through red lights more often than ever. How many times do you see on the news, car went through a red light, car went through a red light, car went through a red light? I would rather give it a 2 count or a 3 count when the light turns green. 1, 2, 3. Is that too long to wait? Is it enough to see that there's no cars going through, that there's not some car flying from my left or flying through my right in my blind spot that I'm not going to see? It just seems like people have become so impatient. Perhaps they're getting less patient because everybody's checking their phones, and this is becoming a phenomenon now of people slowing traffic. We see it on the highways. You could tell when somebody's checking their phone on the highway, they're driving 30 miles an hour. You know they're doing something else. They're not driving. You would not be on a highway driving 30 miles an hour unless you were distracted. So I don't know if it's people getting so used to driving behind people that are distracted, that are not turning quick enough, or if it's people just in stressful situations today. They're so stressed out that they're behind that wheel and they feel like this is their only chance of control. And so you're not moving fast enough for them. You're not moving your foot fast enough from that brake to the pedal, and they're going to give you a honk just because they get a chance to be proactive or to force the issue. You're not, you know, they're in control. They're going to honk at you. They're using that horn as something aggressive. Once again, if it's about 5 seconds, yeah, you know what? Thanks. I'll actually say, oh, geez, I'm glad he did that. I was distracted. But a second? With my head looking straight ahead, you can tell if you're behind somebody, if their head is down or if it's straight up, you could see that. There's a lot of aggression today with people driving their cars. There's a lot of over aggression and control factors, like I'm not going to stay behind you, or you're not moving too fast enough for me, or you're not moving fast enough when that light turns red. I'm supposed to be at an Indy car thing, revving up, waiting for the flag to go. I think we really have to, you know, take a step back, take a deep breath. And I understand life can be stressful. Your personal life right around you and even the world around us. I understand it. But life's been stressful for everybody down through the ages. But it seems like today we have many more distractions. Cars today have so many gadgets and bells and whistles to serve us, but what those really do is distract us. And if there's any place that we don't need any more distractions, it's when we're behind the wheel. Driving the car alone has baked in, built in distractions that can happen. Cars running red lights, people opening doors, people stopping too soon, kids running across the street, kids with bikes, whatever it may be, there's enough possible hazards and enough possible distractions in just the simple course of driving that we shouldn't add distractions created by ourselves, whether it's on your phone or even worse, in your head. Your anger of the moment, your stress of the moment, and filtering and letting that stress out in your driving abilities. We're behind modes of transportation, and we're also behind the wheel of modes of death. That's reality. And so it's been driving me crazy. I've noticed the last, you know, month or so that the light has just changed. I haven't even, I'm moving my foot over and I'm getting honked at. And I don't know what the motivation is for that. If it's the stress of the person, if it's the impatience of the person, if it's the control that I get, let's get going. But there's a reason why we drive with one foot. You know why? Because when you take your foot and move it from the gas pedal to the brake and vice versa, that means that there's a moment there where the car isn't accelerating or stopping. It's a brake. It gives you a chance to react. You know, if you drive, my dad used to drive with 2 feet because they used to have clutches back there. If that's the case, man, you can stop that car and go right away, like boom, in 2 seconds. But if you drive with 1 foot, there's a moment there where you're not stopped, but you're now also not accelerating, which is good. But I would say, don't use driving as a stress reliever, reliever. If you're crazily stressed, because that will be a distraction. Your voice in your head will be a distraction. And don't let your driving abilities and driving habits be an extension of that stress, because that can lead to accidents, road rages, and deaths. Can we all just take a breath, have a little patience, and find a way to make driving that escape, that stress reliever? It can be that if you empty your head, you concentrate on your driving and remove all those thoughts about what the possible stress thing is. Then driving can be actually a stress reliever, and it might take away some of that anger, take away some of that aggression. And then driving can be therapeutic. It can be an escape. But if you take that stress with you in the car, you take that stress and that impatience and that anger and you funnel it through your driving, it's not good for anybody. Do yourself a favor. When you're at a stoplight, take a one or two count before you go. Take a deep breath. And don't check your phone. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast, we are there. Don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 519. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears.